Dr. Saturimus, we're going to return to the prophecy that Yahweh has laid out before us of the days that we live in and the days that are approaching us. It was good to hear in the news that America is having a very difficult time trying to sell its land for peace, a treaty with Israel between the Palestinians, because it is a forfeiture of land as it is envisioned by that treaty that's going to lead to World War III, according to this prophecy, according to God. And so the longer that is not accepted, the better. Now, we've covered so much territory in our presentation of the 17th chapter. Now that we have reached the culmination of that chapter and about to commence our study of the 18th chapter of Yeshayah, which specifically condemns and warns America, I think we'd all benefit from a review. Now, to keep our bearings and to bring the 17th chapter to a close, remember that this prophecy began with the destruction of Damascus and the fall of the Syrian government, something which led to the process of thinning the nation of Israel at its midsection, where it is most vulnerable. Next, we witnessed a gleaning of the covenant's children prior to what appears to be a horrendous chemical or biological attack on Israel's cities, resulting in the deforestation and devastation of much of the northern kingdom in particular. All of this occurred because Israelites came to rely on themselves rather than Yahweh, and they were undermined by America, with America not only causing the Syrian civil war that is going to be the catalyst for the peace treaty, not only because America is the primary agent in forcing Israel to give up land, but also because Israel, the United States, is the primary supplier of weaponry to Israel's enemies. These events were followed by an Islamic invasion of Israel, one so unrelenting and devastating that Yahweh himself will have to intervene to stop it. With this in mind, here's a summary review of the 17th chapter of Yeshayah, a name which means salvation is from Yahweh. It begins, a prophetic warning regarding Damascus. Behold, Damascus is revolting and corrupt and will be removed from among inhabited cities. It is degenerate and unrestrained, and it shall be abolished. And she shall actually become a twisted and tangled heap of rubble. Abandoned and forsaken, deserted and destroyed, will be the inhabited regions and the populated cities of Aroer, speaking of the outcasts and refugees in Jordan and Lebanon. For there will be roaming animals fighting in militant militias, failing miserably. But then there will be no one left to terrorize. Then the fortified cities and defensive structures shall cease to exist on account of Ephraim, the northern kingdom, along with the government out of Damascus, including the remnant of Syria, for being similarly vehement and burdensome, fanatical and onerous, dim-witted and enraged. The children of Israel, those individuals who engage and endure with God, they shall actually continue to exist, prophetically declares Yahweh, the vast array of spiritual messengers and envoys. And it will actually come to pass in that day that the size of Jacob, a synonym for a unified Israel, shall be decreased to the point of no longer being sustainable. And the fattest, best protected, and most vital midsection of his body shall be leaned, shrinking in size. And it shall be like the gathering in and receiving of a harvest, of reaping the grain from the chaff in season, of cutting away so as to remove it from a vexing time of grief, thereby establishing and validating the standing grain. And with his sacrificial lamb, his strong arm, and the ability to shoulder burdens, his visible appearance is light, he will collect and harvest the first fruits. But it shall be as a gleaning, a smaller, secondary harvest of ears of grain in the valley of Raphaim, in the midst of souls destined to die. So in him, speaking of Jacob and thus Israelites and the children of the covenant, there will be those who leave based upon the choices they have made, gleaning smaller, secondary harvests, as in going around and encompassing, shaking them off as a means of harvesting an olive tree. Two or three ripe olives in the top, uppermost branch, four or five, on her fruitful branches which have been separated, prophetically declares Yahweh. The mighty one of Israel, of those individuals who engage and endure with God. In that specific day, this man who is a descendant of Adam will genuinely regard and always accept the Almighty as his maker, and his eyes will actually and continuously look toward God, the set-apart one of Israel. And then he shall never regard, accept, consider, nor look upon the religious ardor, altars, these works of which fingers have made. They will not focus upon either the Asherah, the religious myth representing the mother of God and queen of heaven who is associated with the Lord, Baal, with Easter, Christmas, and Christianity, or the worship of sun god images resulting religious and political monuments. In that specific day, it shall come to be that the cities of his, still addressing Jacob and thus Israel's refuge, and the nation's defensive fortifications, they shall be abandoned. Similar to an occult presence in the thicket, as if drugged with mind-altering incantations and biological agents. And then, the uppermost branch of the olive tree, therefore, will be completely deserted for a time because of the presence of the children of Israel. And so, appalling desolation and stupefying ruin, a stunning deforestation, horrible devastation, leaving these places uninhabitable and deserted. It's going to exist like this for a time as a result of the choices folks have made. Indeed, because they're branded by another. You have completely ignored and actually forgotten, becoming totally ignorant of the God of your salvation and your deliverance, your Savior, and the rock of your protection and refuge. You do not remember or mention the Most High. Therefore, you plant the Lord's vines, and you continually sow an illegitimate, unauthorized, and loathsome means to estrangement by way of a vine branch that needs to be pruned in that day. You raise your garden, and in the early part of the day, your seed will bud and sprout, reaping a shaken and corrupt heap, which will later be piled up and thrust aside. In the daytime, there will be weakness, affliction, and tribulation, including the influence of incurable and incapacitating physical pain and mental anguish. So woe, be wary of a great many nations roaring like the hordes of agitated terrorists, these multitudes of confused and loud-mouthed militants flaunting what they possess, similar to the chaotic uproar of loudly snarling and growling seas. They will wail in agitated and anguished screams, and the roar of the societal chaos of the people of these nations will be like the horrible uproar of the floodwaters, intensely and in great numbers with grating passion. They will continuously strive to desolate and lay waste. This massive number of people who gather together will be like the horrible chaos and riotous roar of the floodwaters, massively great, widespread and abundant. Shall be their desire to destroy everything, giddy in the process, as they crash into the land as a raging storm. But he will rebuke them, warning them, while criticizing their corruption. And so they will be forced to flee, taking flight as a result of being driven back, ultimately ceasing to exist on account of being alienated. And they will be chased and pursued, driven away, similar to the chaff that dies and is discarded on the hills before the approaching presence of the Spirit. And like the chariot wheels of troop transports, rolling like tumbleweeds before the approaching presence of the storm. Approaching at this point of time, out of the darkness of the Arab sunset, then behold terrorism. The deliberate and dreadful mauling and murder of civilians to promote a political and religious objective. In the time before the dawn, it will be over and for naught. This is the fate of those who are deceived regarding their merits. The result of flattering propaganda. The reward for those coveting booty who engaged in a military conquest to plunder and pillage us. And the lot, the recompense and retribution coming to those who seek to conquer us, carrying off the spoils of war. I suspect that you listening to this feel as I do, that we have been given a copy of tomorrow's newspaper. And since this 2,750-year-old prophecy now appears inevitable, how is it that so many people stumble in the darkness, hastening their own destruction in the light of this stunning revelation? How can America tolerate an administration and a Secretary of State demanding that Israel sacrifice land, divesting itself of that which is most vital to it, to achieve peace, when God has said that doing so will lead directly to world war? Why is America negotiating with them on behalf of these individuals that Yahweh calls terrorists? Why are we on the wrong side as a country? Why do Americans tolerate such individuals? Why are they still patriotic? When will we arise, if ever, from our national slumber? The tone of Yashaya's vision does not change as we move through the artificial chapter break. But now as we turn the page, Yahweh does something that he does nowhere else in the whole of the Torah and prophets. Rather than naming the offending country, instead he vividly describes it in this prophetic warning, ostensibly because this nation would remain unknown for over 2,000 years. So while the identity of this nation will soon become obvious, the timing of this transition from Islamic terrorism in Israel to a distant land across the seas should be concerning. When Yahweh revealed that his spirit was going to blow the invading Muslims out of Israel, he said that this was going to occur prior to an approaching storm. Therefore, this continuing testimony appears to relate to that storm, to World War III, to the even more devastating aftermath of the Islamic attempt to conquer and loot God's promised land. We have been given every reason to suspect that the nation that instigated the Syrian war, the nation that has played the greatest role in giving large swaths of Israel to Muslims, the nation that built the weapons the Islamic nations will wield against Israel, is the very nation which will act up again, pushing the rest of the world into global calamity. It is what would have happened already if Vladimir Putin hadn't prevented the United States from bombing Syria, a Russian and Chinese ally, by disposing of its chemical weapons in late 2013. If you are a patriotic American, if you proudly sing God Bless America, you may want to consider this warning. It begins, "Woe in Hebrew, it's oi, alas, expressing great dissatisfaction and an impending warning. To the land, the nation of whirling and buzzing wings, which is from the region beyond the direction of the rivers of Cush. Now, the word for whirling and buzzing is sisat asal. It is translated in this passage as whirling and buzzing. It is from the verbal root sa'al, which speaks of quivering in fear. This, when combined with the image of a loud, percussive, flying weapon which swarms in and destroys, paints a graphic picture similar to the paramount scene of the movie Apocalypse Now. Most of you have probably seen it. One of the great movies of all time, even though the subject is dark. If you recall, before Robert Duvall, who's the one in the cowboy hat, it's actually not a cowboy hat, it's a infantry, American infantry hat, cavalry hat, I should say. It's an American cavalry hat. And the cavalry in the U.S. Army now is the helicopter-borne as opposed to horse-borne. That Robert Duvall tells us that he loves the smell of napalm in the morning as a swarm of Huey helicopters, wings whirling, instill panic in a Vietnam village with machine guns blazing and missiles firing, collectively destroying by burning, incinerating everything in sight, all punctuated with the German March of the Valkyries blaring from the loudspeakers. More fearsome still and quintessentially American, Apache gunships replete with menacing Gatling guns have instilled fear worldwide. While it may have been unintended, Kanaf wings is from a primitive root which conveys stealth, as in hidden from view. Among military aircraft, this too is quintessentially an American concept. Should you be interested in the reference to Cush, he was Noah's grandson through Ham. In the Table of Nations found in Bereshith Genesis 10, Ham represents Africa and Asia, while his firstborn, Cush, became the forefather of Babylon. Ham's other sons were Mitzrayim, denoting Egypt, Put, the progenitor of Libya, and Canaan, addressing the tribes that occupied the Promised Land. Affirming Cush's association with Mesopotamia, he fathered Nimrod, the Assyrian and Babylonian king who first popularized sun god religious mythology. Now we'll continue to consider the rivers of Cush when we return to Shattering Myths. Trying to identify what might be represent Cush, because we're told that this land of whirling and buzzing wings is on the other side of the world from the perspective of this prophet who is in Jerusalem and the heart of the Promised Land. It's important for us to know where we can locate Cush. And there appear to be two candidates, and one of the two candidates would be northern Mesopotamia, in the northern area of today's Iran and Iraq, because Cush fathered Nimrod. Nimrod was the Babylonian king who was the first to popularize the sun god religions and mythology that are so rampant today, that have been really ingested wholesale within Christianity, for example. He was the first man to be considered the son of the sun, the sun being the principal pagan deity, and thus a man god. This aspect of the Babylonian religion, whereby the son of God was killed and resurrected, was first manifest in Tammuz, who was modeled after Nimrod himself, and then incorporated into the Egyptian religion through Osiris, into the Greek religion through Dionysus, whom the Christian Jesus is very closely modeled, and the Roman religion, Bacchus, whose winter solstice celebration is known today as Christmas, and ultimately in the Christian Jesus, deceiving so many people throughout the ages. Therefore, based upon this reference, the rivers of Cush would have to include the region America invaded when it gave Iraq to Iran, thus igniting the Syrian Civil War. Well, it's a stretch, since Nimrod was rumored to be of African descent, and since Cush means black, Cush is thought by some to be Africa. However, most lexicons, such as the Dictionary of Biblical Languages, designate Cush as an unknown land. That's not really true. There are two geographic designations for Cush, so we can locate it in two different places. And for the rivers of Cush to be in two different places and both be referred to as the rivers of Cush would not be inconsistent. You know, there are many places that have a red river. There are many places where you'll find a black river, for example. The first and only attempt to locate it geographically, at least in the Torah, is associated with the land of Cush. Geographically in the Torah, it's found in a reference to the position of the Garden of Eden in Bereshit 2:13. As we discovered with a modicum of research, and we presented that as part of this program, it becomes obvious that Eden was located in the eastern part of today's Turkey, near the headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, near or even under Lake Van. In the Bereshit account, the Gishon River winds its way through the whole land of Cush. Today we find a legacy of this name in the Cush Dagh, or Cush Mountains, which tower above the Iranian city of Tabriz. The Cush range is less than 200 miles from where the headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, best known as the best known tributaries, I should say, associated with Eden. Now, ignoring the Torah's initial reference to the rivers flowing out of Eden and into the area known as Iraq and Iran today, and then also disregarding the plural use of Nahari, rivers, there, and I say this because there's only one river in Egypt, religious scholars are wont to place the land of Cush, as Cush is often transliterated with a C rather than a K. It is written in Hebrew, K-Wa-Shen, so K-O-W or K-U-W-S-H. They want to place it in the upper kingdom of Egypt, along the Nile. Cush is also presented as Ethiopia in the King James Version, and thus Strong's, even though there is no such country, at least at the time, writes Ethiopia. That country was unknown to the Israelites and did not exist at the time, so it cannot be Cush. Other references in Yeshayah tie Cush and Mitzrayim, Egypt, together, at least politically and militarily, because they align to wage war against the Israelites. You'll find that in Yeshayah, Isaiah 23 and 45:14. Egypt and Cush are also connected by Yaketzel Ezekiel in Yaketzel 34. And King Dod, who is David, in Mizmor Psalm, Song 68:31. In Daniel 11:43, the people of Cush are said to be rich as a result of their business dealings with Egypt and with Libya. Also, in Amos 9:7, Yahweh says that the sons of Yisrael, speaking of them, he says they're actually the sons of Cush, using the term to demean his people's affinity for human subjugation. Well, they were subjugated by the Egyptians in the upper Nile Delta region. And so to say that since they have a penchant for going back into slavery, as they were enslaved by the Assyrians and the Babylonians, that this reference that the sons of Israel are now the sons of Cush would certainly affirm the connection with their time in the Upper Nile Delta, Goshen area of Mitzrayim or Egypt. Therefore, Putting this all together, the rivers of Cush could either refer to the Nile Delta region of Egypt, where the river divides into a number of tributaries, or the region of northern Mesopotamia, today's Iran, Iraq, between the Tigris and Euphrates. And while all of this is interesting, Yahweh isn't talking about Cush per se, but instead about a nation which is beyond and opposite of the rivers of Cush, a place situated on the opposite side of the world from either northern Iraq and Iran or the Nile Delta of Egypt from the perspective of Yisrael and particularly from Jerusalem. Since Europe, Russia, the Middle East, and Africa are either included or adjacent to one another and to the Cush candidates, they must all be excluded from our consideration. But not the New World, which is opposite of the Old on the other side of the globe. Moreover, since Yahweh has twice mentioned sea in his prelude to this warning, since he is about to tell us that this nation will send its envoys across the sea, and since Israel's western border is the Mediterranean Sea, we may want to draw a line from Jerusalem across the Mediterranean Sea and through the Straits of Gibraltar to see where that leads us when we take it to the other side of the world. And folks, that line intersects the northeastern corridor of the United States between Washington, D.C. and New York City. Yeah, but that's not all. If we start again in Jerusalem and then move our line down so that it passes through the Nile Delta, it intersects the southernmost part of Florida, right around the Florida Keys. It goes through the southern tip of Texas. And then on the far side of the world, the southern tip of the Big Island of Hawaii. Then keeping the starting point, the city in which this prophecy was revealed, but placing the lines over the rivers of Cush, beginning over Lake Van and moving southeast through northern Iraq and Iran, the extension of this line points to the northernmost part of Alaska. So the epicenter is between Washington, D.C. and New York City. But this land would be inclusive of everything from the southern tip of Florida, Texas, and Hawaii to northern Alaska. Therefore, the United States of America, and only the U.S., qualifies geographically when viewed from this perspective on the opposite side of the world from Israel. America is also the nation best known for its winged military prowess, and most notably, helicopter gunships. These whirling wings, Apache and Black Hawk helicopters, swooping into lands far and wide, are etched into the world's psyche. Guns chattering in Vietnam, Somalia, Afghanistan, and Iraq. And since the terms used here remain applicable to any loud-winged military aircraft, I dare say that if you gave the entirety of the Paleo-Hebrew lexicon to work with, if you were given it all, you couldn't write a more apt description. However, these are not the only clues that we have been given thus far. In this context, this oi warning, it's being directed toward the nation responsible for the destruction of Damascus. That would be America. For the thinning of Israel at the waist, that will be America. For equipping the Islamic terrorists flooding into the land with all manner of weapons, that would be America. For empowering them to the point that Yahweh has to intervene to defend his people, that too would be America. And once again, the only common denominator with all of these things is America, the nation that started the Syrian war by invading Iraq and giving that country to Iran. The United States is the principal broker of the land for peace deal that will sever Israel, making the nation indefensible. Kerry is there now, begging them to accept his plan that does this very thing. And America is the principal arms merchant to the Muslim world, currently providing Islamic nations with 25 times more weaponry than is made available to Israel. Hundreds of billions of dollars. All that will be leveled against God's chosen people. And today, the U.S. Department of State is threatening to cut off that supply, including replacement parts, entirely, if Israel doesn't capitulate and surrender the West Bank to the Muslims. So rather than having two clues directed at America, there have already been five, most of which exclude any other option. Therefore, if you are an American, especially one who supports either political party or praises the military, you have been forewarned. Oh, but Yahweh wasn't finished describing this land and identifying this nation, its location, diverse racial composition, military prowess, diplomatic tendencies, and attitude towards others. And we will consider what he has to say about the American people when we return to Shattering This. In this next statement from the 18th chapter of Yahshua Isaiah, we are given between 25 and 30 additional clues, depending on how completely the palette of terms Yahweh inspired is defined. Before us is a plethora of hints, many of which are profound. So since most every aspect of each descriptive term Yahweh chose seems to point in one direction, identifying one culprit, I've elected to share every nuance with you, expanding these amplifications beyond what we would normally do. In the context of this prophecy, the nation responsible for precipitating the destruction of Damascus, the nation guilty of thinning Israel at the waist, the nation best known for its whirling wings, the nation beyond the rivers of Cush from the perspective of a prophet living 2,750 years ago in Yehuda, dispatches its envoys by way of the sea. And so, in floating vessels on the surface of the waters, the messengers travel swiftly, indulgently, and immorally. This nation, from different races and places, is tall, often intoxicated, and immodest. And they have a propensity to take things away from others. They are scrubbed clean, smooth-skinned, and often completely shaven, and yet typically reckless. These people are feared by some, revered by others, from here to there and beyond, all in a future time. This population, which is comprised of many different races, routinely vomits up and spews out nonsense in a strange foreign language, talking down to others, mocking them, while continually marching off to war based on this condescending and moronic rhetoric, always trying to impose its influence, establishing the rules, while eagerly expecting to throw others out of their place. It aggressively subdues, trampling people down and kicking them out. This country is also divided by rivers. Yahshua, salvation is from Yahweh. 18:2. That's your sign, America. Plaster it on your forehead. This warning, this statement of displeasure from God, is all about you. Most all of the Hebrew terms that were used in this prophetic declaration give us a word's eye view of the prophet's distant future, our present. So we should not be surprised that they are rich in their implications and uncommon in their usage. Depending upon the way they are vocalized, there is a considerable range of connotations associated with each word. Therefore, I have sought to provide you with as comprehensive an assessment as possible of the nation Yahweh was describing. I suspect that every connotation of each word was intended. We know from these words that this nation is on the far side of the world when viewed from Jerusalem. It projects its influence using its fleet of ships. So, It should be noted that the United States has the largest Navy in the history of the world. The nation deploys 12 massive aircraft carrier battle groups to swiftly project its power far and wide, more than the rest of the world combined. Two more are under construction, so we should not be surprised by the reference to rapid gunboat diplomacy. No nation has ever deployed a more capable or fearsome arsenal of oceanic and airborne weapons than America. It is perhaps why the nation is both feared and revered, sometimes respected, but often intimidating. A few years ago, WikiLeaks made thousands of cables between American ambassadors and the U.S. State Department available, revealing the cold, arrogant, and immoral nature of the country's envoys. They revealed that the United States remains oblivious when it comes to the consequence of its actions. For example, very few Americans acknowledge that the country's invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq were both based on a web of lies, that both invasions were actually counterproductive, making bad situations worse, but the government knows this. And yet this reality is why so many American troops are coming home only to commit suicide. When we continue with Shattering Myths on Monday, the first day of the coming week, we will pick up our story of America and God's condemnation of this country in our third hour. Join us at that time. May Yah bless.